Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
By the way, we're in the midst of our member drive. If you're interested in donating, we would really appreciate it. Go to nprnews.org/donate. Thanks.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, you live outside of a city, you have young kids, you want to work. What do you do when childcare is unaffordable and inaccessible? We heard from many of you when Chris Farrell sat in on the show and he talked about rural and urban economics. Here's one listener from Greater Minnesota who called in to tell Chris about her experience.
I recently moved to St. James from Mountain Lake, and the Economic Development Association had interested parties, manufacturing parties, but they looked around and didn't see enough daycare for their workers, so they didn't come.
Oh.
And the city kept trying to get more people interested in daycare, offering to help set them up in daycare and whatnot, and one of the families that did daycare out of their home wanted to retire, and they were willing to help train in people, but nobody wanted to do it.
I'm following up today with a conversation that's about solutions for the rural childcare conundrum, both short term and big picture. And I want to hear from you. I think your experience will inform the discussion. If you're struggling to afford childcare in the rural Midwest, what kinds of sacrifices are you making to be able to find childcare? Have you run into a situation where you want to live in a certain place, but you can't find childcare in that area? Have you decided to delay going back to work? Are you spending way too much on your budget for childcare? What would help? So talk to me about your own individual experience, and we'll put that into the mix of the conversation as we talk about the issues and the solutions here. I want this conversation to focus on that as well. Our guest today, Heidi Hagel-Braid, is Director of National Programs for First Children's Finance, based in Minneapolis and with me in the studio. And Heidi, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Jillian White is with us. She's a senior editor at The Atlantic and with us from D.C. And Jillian, welcome. It's good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Heidi, I looked at a state map that spotlighted a number of different areas when it comes to the availability of childcare. I have to say the numbers are really startling. Northeast Minnesota centers are only filling 55% of the need. Northwestern Minnesota filling even less than that. If you are two working parents with children under six, what does this look like if you're living in Minnesota and looking for childcare?
It's really tough. You know, I think that we're looking at a term commonly referred to as childcare deserts all across the country.
I've seen the word used.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I think we're really seeing particular challenges in rural parts of Minnesota that are a little bit different. And so we've been working with communities on these issues for about 5 years. But families on the ground are really making all kinds of different choices because of those shortages. Sometimes they're leaving the communities that they want to live in. Sometimes they're unable to accept employment or opportunities in employment. We hear of families all the time who are traveling in three different directions to drop one child off in one place, a baby in another, and then off to work, and then repeating that pattern again at the end of the day. We're hearing from families who are underemployed or families who are choosing to work opposite shifts to not be able to use childcare just because it's not available. And so those families are really spending fractured time together sometimes.
Yeah, this really comes down to more. This is a more dimensional issue than I thought which is just, well, we're spending a lot of our household income.
Yeah.
They're making a lot of different decisions just to work around the unavailability of this.
Absolutely.
You know, Jillian, I think we may hear from some people in cities who are going to say, hey, we've got our issues with this too. It's really expensive. We can't find childcare that's near to where we live. What's the difference between what's going on in rural America and what's going on in the cities?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that is a challenge in rural America that isn't quite as big of a challenge in urban environments is just the sheer lack of actual daycare centers, quality, affordable daycare. So one of the things that you do have in cities is just more daycare providers, more daycare possibilities, more proximity to other people. So for instance, in D.C. or in New York or in Chicago, you have options such as a nanny share, where you can hire perhaps a student who is local and studying, you know, young childhood psychology to come look after your children and the children of a few other coworkers for up to 8 to 10 hours a day. And you can have that slightly more informal arrangement. So you can kind of figure out more creative ways. If you are in a more rural environment, not only do you not have as many centers, but you likely don't have as many opportunities to be creative that are also affordable.
So the solutions, Heidi, are just fewer and further between than coming up with some creative ways that Jillian has talked about here, if you're in rural America.
Absolutely. And to build off of that comment, we're also looking at the business side of childcare. And one of the particular issues that happens in rural is that not all business models are sustainable. You can't build a huge childcare center to solve that problem because the facilities might not exist, or the scale of the solutions have to be different in mm-hmm. rural, and they really require lots of different partners coming together and being innovative and thinking about what resources they have and blending those in different and new ways than before.
A call here from Elaine in St. Paul. Hi, Elaine. It sounds like you've got some historical perspective on this. Good.
Yes.
Good.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
Yes. Okay. Here's my little story and addition, and I'm very glad you're doing this because we've talked about this far and wide, and nobody else seems to pick up on it. So back in the 90s, another couple who were friends, close friends of ours, were looking for some daycare and preschool. We didn't find anything that satisfied us, so we created our own. I looked into what did I need to do to license my home for preschool, and we found another professional couple, and between the three couples, we created this wonderful preschool, and we were able to hire excellent preschool teacher.
You mean you and, three couples were funding this, you're saying?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. Rather than pay somebody else to do it, we did it ourselves. And when my boys then were old enough to go into public school, the second couple had a bit younger child, and they added another family when ours moved on.
Yeah.
And then the third couple did it with their home.
Elaine, I think I have the sense of this, and this is creative. I wonder how realistic this is, Heidi, for people who are living in a rural part of the country. I mean, that's no small amount of money to commit to this. Then again, you're going to be paying for childcare. So
right.
What do you think of the example?
Well, I think it's, what a lot of people are forced into is sort of coming up with their own solutions.
Wow.
But we also know that early education is the most critical part of a child's learning. So many things are based on that 0 to 5. So when we're talking about formal childcare, we really want the very best people doing that work. And it sounds like these three couples were really committed to that idea. So we want to blend the very best people who should be with kids with a business model that makes sense. And so finding those opportunities and building on them are really important. That is not an uncommon scenario.
Wow. Jillian, this Elaine's question and her history with this reminds me of this piece that I read in The Atlantic about why good daycare was once a priority for feminists and why it seems to have slipped so far down the list behind issues like reproductive rights and equal pay. Do you have any insight in that? Why isn't this a feminist cause?
Well, I think for a lot of people, it remains a feminist cause. I think this is one of those things that as women went back to work, daycare became more and more of a necessity. Before, it just wasn't an issue as much because a lot of women were staying at home, so it was a given that they would take care of children. I think as we got to a critical mass where daycare was somewhat available, or at least somewhat suitable daycare was available to a large enough number of people, it just kind of slipped down that list a little bit, and more vocal, kind of flashier causes became more ingrained in the feminist kind of the feminist platform. I think now what you have is a lot of people who are stuck scrounging around for daycare or for daycare solutions. And a lot of times, especially in cities, those are people who are lower on the socioeconomic totem pole. Mm-hmm. They are people mm-hmm. without as much education. They are people who, quite frankly, at the end of the day, they can't just pony up $3,000, $4,000 a month and say, oh, well, this stinks, but I can do it for 5 or 6 years. So I think sometimes that makes it a little, people end up in the margins a little bit more.
Your use of the word flashy, I think, is well taken here, that it doesn't seem like a really sexy issue. It's so essential, right, Heidi, for the reasons you've just said.
Absolutely. And not only is it a feminist issue, but I think in Minnesota, we're really starting to see it as an economic development issue.
How so?
You know, when you are talking about having a vibrant community, if you want to keep young families, if you want to attract young families to your community, childcare is an economic development mm-hmm. strategy. And we're seeing communities embracing that. And so although it isn't a feminist issue, it also is a bipartisan community issue that everyone can get behind. And so there is great potential, really, to bring all kinds of partners to the table in developing solutions.
I was thinking about that because if you're a company trying to attract a workforce, a highly educated workforce, and maybe a fairly young workforce to your community, you are really going to be short-circuiting the people that you have to choose from if you don't have an infrastructure that includes good childcare around you, right? I think
Absolutely.
Some companies are learning this in
Absolutely.
Rural Minnesota.
We're starting to see the private sector get involved in childcare because it impacts their bottom line. They may well love children, but they really care about retaining and attracting their own workforce. And childcare is a strategy to do that.
Jillian, I was wondering if that's one of the solutions that I want to talk about this hour, which is local employers contribute to a fund through, I don't know, you know, tax assessments or through contributions that supports the establishment of childcare in towns where there aren't many options. Do you see any of that going on? Are employers taking a more activist role in this?
So I think employers are definitely starting to, and I want to put emphasis on starting to,
okay.
Are starting to take daycare as a serious consideration in the overall benefits package. And I think that's in part because it has gotten to the point where women and men are being forced to off-ramp their careers in order to take care of children because they've realized that they're spending either entirely too much time and putting their actual work in jeopardy, or they simply are using their entire salary to fund daycare. So I think it's becoming even a bigger issue when it comes to retaining quality talent and ensuring that they can move to the next level. So I think you are seeing some employers. And the, part of the problem, though, is that oftentimes adding in daycare as an added benefit is an easier thing for a massive company to do, a massive, incredibly profitable company. And sometimes the argument that smaller companies make is that their margins are just tighter. It's harder for them to add in benefits, especially benefits that are so costly, as we know childcare is. It's a very labor-intensive practice, especially if, as Heidi said, we have people who we really want in these roles looking after these kids and, you know, forming their critical development at ages 0 to 5. So it's something that we're seeing, but it's certainly something that I think workers aren't seeing implemented as quickly or on as wide of a scale as they would want.
Yeah, Judith just called from Minneapolis to say earlier in the show, a woman said that a business didn't come to her small town because of the lack of daycare. That was that clip we played from, I think, a show that Chris Farrell did. And Judith asks, well, why didn't the business invest in a daycare themselves? Wouldn't that have been to their advantage in the long run? What do you tell employers about this, Heidi?
Well, I remind employers that that they are the ultimate beneficiary of childcare. It ensures that their
lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their employees are at work and more productive at work when they have safe, reliable childcare. So it is in their best interest to figure out ways to support that in a community. And we're seeing all kinds of really wonderful things start to pop up in Minnesota as cities and counties across rural Minnesota are getting into this issue. They're finding creative ways to address that in local economic development
agencies.
Give me an
example of that, if you can think of one.
The city of Arlington in Sibley County has a forgivable loan program that provides $1,000 of incentive financing for new providers. West Central Initiative in kind of like the west central part of Minnesota has a forgivable loan
fund. Where there's
a
lot of need, I noticed on that map.
Absolutely.
Right?
Otter Tail County has a tax abatement policy that for the first time includes childcare businesses. And they're also getting involved in providing bonding to fund a childcare facility. And they're engaging the private sector because they can't be the full solution. But they're starting to engage private sector communities really big. And then small and medium businesses as well. So we're starting to see a couple of those things generate inside of our own state.
To the phones to Tracy in Cold Spring. Hi, Tracy. What's your experience with this?
Well, hello. This is a great conversation. I think it's really important. I'm actually a previous child care provider.
Ah.
I opened a business in my home. And the reason I really opened the business was because in my area there wasn't enough daycares, and the people that I met I didn't think were qualified enough to raise my precious baby.
Uh-huh.
So I opened my own daycare, and I have a little insight onto why it is so expensive.
Good.
When a parent pays their weekly fee, it may seem a little high, and maybe you feel like you're paying too much per hour for that parent to take care, or that person to take care of your child, but you have to keep in mind that that weekly fee doesn't cover any retirement benefits or workers' comp. There's no 401k. There's no health care benefit. And then in addition to that, there's huge amounts of wear and tear on your homes. They're constantly repairing, replacing.
I never thought of that. Good point.
Really high.
It's, yeah.
You know, about $100 every other year when you think about how much money a child care provider pays that or makes, that's really not that much money. And actually what got me out of the business was because if you can imagine a parent working a 40-hour week, and in my small community, people usually commute to the larger town, so they would usually drop their child off about an hour before work and pick them up an hour after, which leaves that child care provider working a 50-hour week, plus 50 hours is only with FaceTime with kids, plus you have to do your own taxes, do your own paperwork, cleaning, sanitizing, shopping. There's required continuing education hours. So I ended up working 65, 70 hours a week and really only making the amount of money that, you know, maybe would add up to a decent wage at a 40-hour week. So I was putting in a lot of hours. I kind of felt like for free for these parents because I was trying to keep my prices low to make it even possible for them to work, you know, a mid-range job and be able to afford childcare.
Tracy, how long did you give this?
I gave it almost a decade. It was about nine years.
Okay. Boy, your point about where's the benefits part of this? I think, Heidi, this is a really good one. How do you pack that into the pricing? I mean, you're going to price parents right out of being able to use it.
That is the crux of the problem, is that the price of high-quality childcare is unaffordable for almost everyone. You know, I think that the ideal is trying to keep childcare at a 7% of an income, and that's just, it's not there. And you can hear from our caller, exactly right. When we did an analysis of family childcare, 43 childcare providers in Minnesota in 2015, on average, many of them were making under minimum wage. By the time that you added up the number of hours that they were spending operating and then planning and managing their business, it wasn't a proposition that was financially viable for them to stay in. So we really need to have additional sources of investment to really buoy these small, independent, individually owned childcare businesses all across the country.
Jillian, this is interesting because you're in D.C. and it supports what Heidi is saying here, that Minnesota is number three in the cost of infant childcare. D.C. is the most expensive. I mean, do you, if you live outside of the city in D.C. and you have a newborn and you have to get back to work, how in the heck do you afford that?
Well, this is where we see a lot of people choosing to not go back to work for extended periods of time, or hopefully having family members who can take care of a kid for a few months until they're a little older and the cost is a little less. But that's truly for the luckiest, I would say, people who can scrounge up the money or who have family nearby or can come up with some of these creative solutions. You know, in stories that I found in the past, I've found one of the most striking things is that workers who work in some of the more affluent, high-quality child care centers, daycare centers in these areas, especially in urban areas, actually can't afford to send their own children to high-quality daycare. So they are scrounging and trying to make ends meet and figure out where they can place their child and still not making enough to take care of their own children, even as they spend, as that last caller said, 40, 50 hours a week taking care of other people's children.
Oh, wow. Jennifer in Alexandria called in to say, I pay a lot of money to send two kids under the age of 5 to daycare. It amounts to half of my paycheck. Wow. My partner and I split up, so I had to move back in with my parents to be able to afford sending my kids to care. Here's Dana in St. Paul. Hi, Dana. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to add to the conversation, I work with breastfeeding mothers, and I often hear from women who have maybe one option where they live. If their child care provider is not knowledgeable about, you know, how breastfed babies are fed and not necessarily respecting their wishes, it puts these women's breastfeeding relationship at risk. A lot of times they're ending up being forced to use formula that they're not interested in doing and they don't need to. And these women don't feel like they can just say, let me go find another provider. This is their one option.
I mean, this is kind of dovetailing with what we just said about infant care and why it's so expensive, Heidi. And then you layer on the issue of, I want to be able to breastfeed through certain amount of months for my child, but the child care provider has to work with me on this. Is Dana right when she says you run out of options pretty quick?
Absolutely. Infant care is really hard to find.
Why?
Because it deserves the attention of more adults. So we don't want 60 kids, 60 babies in a room being watched by two people.
Okay.
So the best thing is that we have safe and healthy places for infants to be, and that requires more adults to be in charge of them. So in family childcare, it restricts the number of babies who can be inside of that license. In a childcare center in Minnesota, it's a 1-to-4 ratio. And if you're looking at best practice recommendations, they're saying one adult for every 3 babies. So those labor costs are really high and the slots are limited. It is the most expensive kind of care because it doesn't break even. I work on the business side of child care, and we refer to infant care almost like the loss leader in a grocery store. It's the milk and eggs. You hope that you recoup the investment through that child as they stay in your program, because you can make money perhaps when they are a toddler or a preschool. It's very hard for infant care to break even because the number of slots are limited for good reason.
So, I mean, is this a case where you might have a facility and part of it is just infant care and you're losing money on that?
Yeah.
But the rest of the facility is for older kids and you
it help kind of
you recoup
underwrites.
It?
Yeah.
But that's a long time to lose money on. What's the solution to that?
Well, you have to find a business model that works. And
wow.
So serving primarily infants and toddlers can be a struggle for lots of communities because you just can't roll out lots and lots of slots. You need a lot of adults who are qualified to do that work. And so it really requires people to get very fiscally minded when they are putting together their business plans for childcare.
You know what the problem with this is? Jillian, go ahead. I was just going to say, we're not a country that really supports a long maternity leave. So if you want to go back and you have to go back to work and you're looking for infant care, man, what a struggle.
Absolutely. And one of the things I was going to say, building on the infant care conversation, because infant care, I think, is truly the beginning and the crux of the issue. It's the most expensive. It's the hardest to find. And if you are in a city or if you are outside, as Heidi was saying, there's a limited number of slots for two reasons. One, because it's incredibly expensive to run as a business. So oftentimes a daycare center will have a small number of infant slots and then a larger operation for older kids. One, to fulfill the regulation that there's a high proportion of adults to babies, but also because it's a loss category. But then not having a ton of spots, especially if there aren't that many daycare facilities available, means that when you have a baby, the ability to find care for that child after your 2 or 3 month maternity leave is over becomes incredibly difficult because those spots are snapped up by other people. So it really compounds the problem right at the beginning where you most need help with daycare, where you most need quality daycare, and when you're already trying to adjust to this higher cost of living with this new little person.
A call here from Heidi in Duluth. Heidi, it sounds like you want to talk about the maternity leave part of this too. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that still in this country, we don't have maternity leave. And more help with the child care situation up until children go to school. And it's just like every other country has figured this out. Why haven't we?
Let's ask our guests. Heidi, why haven't we figured this out?
Well, that's a great question. And I hope we're on pathways to get there. But I don't know why we haven't figured that out. I don't have a good answer for that question.
Jillian, I mean, what is it about? Is it the way we view, corporate independence and our social safety net? Or I'm reaching here. It's hard to figure out an answer.
No, I mean, I think it's for several reasons. I think it's historical. I think it's the idea that after women started heading to the workforce en masse, no one ever really changed the social contract. Mm-hmm. I think that America is not a particularly strong social safety net country, especially when you look at other countries where maternity leave is, potentially up to a year, and there are benefits for fathers and there are benefits for caregivers all the way through various stages of life. The United States has never really been a leader in that. And I think now we're seeing kind of the pain side of that. The economics just don't make sense anymore.
Right. Charles in Lake City called to say, in Sweden, the state pays each parent 80% of their wages for 2 years. Wow. State-sponsored parental leave eliminates the need for daycare and allows parents to spend crucial developmental years with their kids. A quick call here from Jeremy in Anoka. How does this work for you, Jeremy?
Well, my wife and I decided early on before our first child was born. We have a daughter who is coming up on 3 years old and a son who will be 2 years old shortly after that. We knew at the very beginning that it just didn't make sense for us financially to both work during the day. And even though we would earn more money, 95% of that income would have gone to a daycare provider. And so in our minds, we thought, well, we would just be paying somebody so we didn't have to be with our kids. And it just didn't make sense. So I work nights and my wife works days.
Wow.
And yeah. It's a little hard on me because I don't get a lot of sleep. I don't get a lot of sleep, but that's the decision that makes the most sense for us, at least for the first, 4, 5, 6 years until they go to school, and then things will be different.
And you'll get off the night shift, hopefully.
And I'll get off. I mean, it's not overnights, but it's like 4 to 11.
But you're missing family time then, right?
I'm actually not, because, for instance, this morning I took my kids to the park. So I have my kids all day during the day. And then my wife gets home and is with them for the evenings. And then, we have a couple days off during the week. But we knew from the very beginning that finding a child care provider just financially made very little sense for us. Now, we've been fortunate to have family members, be able to buy us like these temporary, what you call like a punch card. So every now and then our kids can go to like a daycare thing for, say, 1 day out of the a week or so.
Yeah, for the kind of temporary help. Yeah.
Right. And the flip side of that is because I'm home with them during the day, I get to take them to early family childhood education classes, ECFE classes here in Anoka County.
Sounds good.
So it kind of helps out because that wouldn't be available if they were at like a separate daycare thing.
Jeremy,
and then I get to go.
Really good to have your call. I mean, you guys have figured this out. But there are sacrifices being made. That's what the show is about, as we talk about some solutions and your own individual experience. If you've just tuned in, conversation about the cost of childcare, particularly outside of cities, and what kinds of arrangements are you making within your own household to be able to afford childcare? Are you doing what Jeremy just described, which is taking a day and a night shift to make this work? Are you finding that you're delaying going back to work because you really can't afford that infant daycare? Heidi Hagel-Braid with us from First Children's Finance and Jillian White with a senior editor at The Atlantic. Jen tweeted in, I never expected to be a stay-at-home mom, but after the birth of my second child, it became clear it was cost prohibitive to continue to work. I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss work, and I've had a hard time not resenting leaving. Love my kids. It's a sacrifice. Heidi, I can feel it. You mentioned some things that might be available to people who are in kind of a box like Jen is. What's
Absolutely.
Working out there?
You know, rural communities really are starting to realize that they have to get engaged in this problem. And at First Children's Finance, we have a program called the Rural Child Care Initiative Program. It's been around since 2013. And we partner through a community engagement process with rural communities to develop solutions. And so what we're seeing in rural communities is that we're bringing together the private sector, we're bringing together local economic development, school districts, private sector leaders, chambers of commerce, all kinds of folks. And we are looking at what the resources and strengths are, finding out what exactly we need to build in that community as far as the number of slots, and then finding ways to blend those ideas together.
So let me ask you this about that, though. When you're saying we're bringing them together, are you saying this is going to require a financial investment, and everybody has to be willing to make that to find a solution in some of these places? I mean, is that it?
I think that's part of it.
Okay.
It's not all of it, but it's definitely part of it. And I think we're talking about how many slots does a community need? If a community needs 60 slots, that's a different kind of financial investment than a community that needs 600. And so looking for models that will work in that community, seeing what the resources are, and then developing some options from there. We're starting to see communities actually look at childcare like they would think about a swimming pool project in their community. How can they finance it? How can they encourage it? What is the local policy and funding mechanisms that they can bring to the table? How can the private sector be a part of that? And where are the facilities? So we have family childcare that can operate in someone's home, which is wonderful. How do we incentivize more people to get into that business, to make it worth their while to start those small businesses? Or if it's more of a childcare center that needs to be built, what are the facilities that are available? How can we rehab existing facilities? Or how can we engage the school district in really making sure that we have adequate spaces for kids 0 to 5?
Jillian, I was just thinking, as Heidi was describing this, I was thinking, remember all the cities that were posturing for Amazon and here's all the advantages we have? I'll bet nobody had childcare way up there at the top of why Amazon ought to come to their community. But we should think of it as an asset, shouldn't we?
Well, I was going to say, I think one of the things that needs to happen, and we heard this from an earlier caller, when a company was thinking about moving to her town and then decided not to because there was no childcare. So the step beyond that we would actually want to see is companies instead saying, we really want to move to this town. It does not have childcare.
Right.
What can we do to partner with this local government to get childcare options available for our workers so that we can build in a space
right.
that we're clearly already attracted to? And I think the thing that happens now is that so many corporations look around and either it is not at all a priority for them, and they figure, well, hopefully we'll just pay people enough that they can figure it out on their own. Or they say, well, there's nothing here, there isn't adequate childcare, so we just won't move here. But that doesn't actually further the effort.
Right.
That doesn't actually do anything for the people in that locality or for the workers who would have wanted to work there or for the company. So what we would want to see as the next logical step is companies really taking the initiative to kind of put childcare at the forefront of the decisions they're making.
Call here from Shelley in Minneapolis. Shelley, you wanted to talk about corporations and their role in this?
Yes. I have always heard that one of the problems for people who are on assistance is taking care of the childcare costs, that they don't make enough to pay for the childcare, so they don't work. And I thought, what if a corporation took, made an on-site daycare, and the people who are on assistance could get daycare at a different corporation for their own children, and then they would be trained in parenting, daycare, childcare skills, or accounting, or something else that would help the daycare run, and the government take, you know, they would pay that, and then, you know, people could have one day a week, they could go have lunch with their child, and the children of the corporate people would also benefit from socioeconomic and possibly ethnic and
interesting
diversity.
Idea. What do you think of that, Heidi?
I think it's a great idea, and I think it's something that is already happening. I do think when we say corporate childcare, we think of really big companies.
Absolutely. I think Best Buy does this, I thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, big companies with a lot of resources.
Yes, who have employer-sponsored childcare.
Right.
But there are lots of ways that small and medium businesses can get involved as well. In Lyon County, there is a construction company who realized that they needed to retain seasonal workers, and part of what they were struggling with was childcare. Those are long, long days. And they said, we've got the resources to actually build something. And so they set up a childcare, a small family childcare in Minnesota. There's a special license that allows family childcare to happen outside of a residence. Mm. And so it was exactly the right size. And it was a way for a provider who didn't want to have the childcare business in her home anymore, wanted to be able to close the door at 6 o'clock like everybody else and go home. She could move her operation into a space that the company contributed to.
Creative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They also
solved like a number of different problems all at one time.
You bet.
Wow.
And they were able to provide benefits to this person. She became an employee. And they underwrote the business. And so they were providing it as an employee benefit. They were giving a 50% tuition discount. And the operations of the money coming into the childcare met all of the expenses. The only thing that it wasn't paying for was the operator. And the company, the construction company said, that's the cost of doing this. You know, we think that it's a great investment. And they thought about it like health insurance or retirement or an employee benefit. And what they were spending on employee turnover, they converted into investments in childcare. And everybody was winning. Kids have a place to be. Parents have reliable, high-quality childcare. And the business has.
And they hang on to
childcare.
Their valued workers.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I was thinking about this, Jillian, as I was reading a piece in the New York Times. I think it's Claire Kane Miller wrote a piece in July. Bigger perspective on why young millennials are deciding to wait to have children. But here's something that I pulled out that I thought fit what we were talking about. Women have more agency over their lives, and many feel that motherhood has become more of a choice, yes. But it's a story of economic insecurity, too. Young people have record student debt, many graduated in a recession, and many can't afford homes, all as parenthood has become more expensive. Women in particular pay an earnings penalty for having children. Do you think there's something to this, just this perception that childcare all the way through is just getting more and more expensive, and it's an expense that I don't feel that I can weigh, you know, as I make a decision about having a family.
Oh, I think this is absolutely true. I mean, certainly the payment penalty is very true for women. You know, women who have within their families decided, I should take some time off. I should take a year off to care for this child, either because I want to and it's really important to me to spend time with my baby, or because financially that is the best option. It is harder for them to come back to work. It is harder for them to continue to climb the ladder. It's certainly harder for them to make the case for increased wages or to get the wages that they get, the same wage trajectory that they had prior to leaving the workplace for a little bit, which then, of course, is difficult because it doesn't keep up with the escalating cost of childcare.
Right.
And it is also certainly true that millennials, some of the people who are just now entering what we think of typical years of having children, you know, have huge amounts of student loan debt, have huge other expenses, or do not have homes and are, you know, paying rent in some places at a very high cost. And it's making, I think, a lot of those decisions a lot more difficult. So I do think there are a lot of women who say, well, let me wait until I'm 30, 31, 32, 33, and a little bit more established in my career at a higher salary rate, have paid off my student loans or am at least on a good trajectory to, and have saved up some money. You know, more than ever, I'm hearing about people who get married and their savings maybe is for a house, but is also for daycare.
Wow. To the phones to Elisa in Richfield. Hi, Elisa. How does this affect your life and your budget?
Yeah, so we have a one-year-old, a one-and-a-half-year-old, and we were lucky that when she was infant, my mom stayed with her, and I went back to work 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do that. My mom takes care of her one day a week, but we spend $100 a day on daycare part-time.
Wow.
So what my comment is that one of the ways that we try to offset the cost is that my work offers an FSA for dependent care expenses for child care.
Yeah.
But we can only put up to $5,000. And to be honest, we went through it even part time in like a third of the year. So I don't know. I don't know what it would take to have that increased, but that would be a step towards making it at least a little bit more.
Great call.
Affordable.
I mean, so what are the political repercussions or the forces that are working against increasing that FSA reimbursement? Heidi, do you know?
I don't know if there's any forces working against it, but I do think that's a perfect way and an easy way for employers to get involved, right? Adding that benefit of a flexible spending account. And we need to advocate and push for changes in the IRS code that allow a higher number. It's disproportionate to the amount of what people are spending on childcare. $5,000 is great, but it's not going to get you there.
Jillian, I mean, we make tax changes every time some new administration comes in. Why do you think this hasn't been prioritized?
I think it goes back to the question of what we think of ourselves as a country and what we end up prioritizing. And rarely, if ever, is it women and children. And it shouldn't even be thought of as women and children at this point. It is families. But families are not the thing that get prioritized in tax conversations, and certainly not when we're talking about corporate taxes or tax incentives or business tax or anything related to that.
Yeah. Elizabeth in St. Paul called to say, I'm a full-time white-collar business professional with a higher ed degree and two children. If I wasn't in a two-income household, I'd be homeless and on food stamps because paying for child care is so expensive. Heidi, we haven't even talked about single parent households and what you do if you live in the city or in rural Minnesota, when you have to bear this expense yourself. How do you find help for that?
You piece together solutions and
parents and friends and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Wow. We're seeing sort of piecemeal solutions for child care, and that's not as the best interest of children. They thrive on predictability and schedules. And when you're here one day and there that part of the next, that isn't the best early learning environment. So when we're talking about having healthy communities, the return on investment for early childhood is just a number you can't beat.
All the research shows that.
Yes.
It's like there's no question about this.
There is
now,
no question.
Now, why can't policy change because of that?
Absolutely. I think where we really need to push on this is with private sector partners. They have a voice. They advocate for changes in policy and tax code all of the time. And if they start to really understand how this is impacting their own bottom line, the health of their company, perhaps they'd be willing to be messengers of that advocacy.
Call from Sean in Bloomington. Hi, Sean.
Hi. I wanted to tell you a little bit about my situation.
Good.
My wife and I, and we have two children. One's one and one's two. We moved to the Twin Cities area so my wife could attend law school. And just looking at the cost of childcare, we're both professionals. We both have bachelor's, obviously, and I'm actually working on a master's. And I was looking at what it would cost to go to childcare, and essentially it would be about 100% of my paycheck. So
wow.
While she's in law school and I'm doing just one class for a master's degree online, neither of us are working and I'm staying at home taking care of the kids. We're both veterans, so we use the GI Bill to pay for our school, but we're mm-hmm. still taking out student loans just to be able to pay our rent and pay for groceries and pay for anything. So it seems like I wanted to personally make sure that it wasn't my wife staying at home and sacrificing her career so I could go, you know, do something else. It seems like there's a patriarchal sort of problem with why we can't make this investment into including more healthcare, why we can't change our tax code. Is I think largely because institutionally men have been making these decisions and have been making healthcare. Making childcare less of a priority because it's not something that they really think about.
Yeah.
But now that I'm in that situation, I see how big of a problem, how expensive it is to take care of childcare. And for us, it's also a student loan issue.
Jeez. Sean, point really well taken. Glad you called. Jillian, I was thinking that, you know, didn't Ivanka Trump come in with talking points about how this was going to be a priority? Even meetings
yeah.
with mothers about childcare. Has anything happened with that? Am I missing that?
No, so it hasn't really gone anywhere. There were some small policy proposals, but they didn't seem to actually flesh out when you did the numbers. It's one of those things that at a certain point, everyone understands how good it sounds, that childcare and families are and should be a priority and that we should work towards it. But actually putting those things into policy and getting them passed and asking companies or states or whoever to make sacrifices and figure out a way to make the numbers make sense, that has always been a little bit slower.
Yeah. Really good to talk to you again, Jillian. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
A quick question to you, Heidi. I noticed that you don't talk a lot about the state legislature in this. You've focused a lot more on private sector companies and smaller communities. Why? Doesn't the state have a role in this or not?
I think the state absolutely has a role, and we've seen them really start to be engaged in it. They're hearing from their constituents. They are putting pressure on the system to make changes. And I think the state systems in Minnesota really are tackling this issue and trying to make things easier, more seamless, really trying to be innovative in responses. We're seeing investments from not only human services and education, but also from the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Mm-hmm.
They've made some recent investments in rural childcare in particular. And so I think that we are starting to see some movement because the pain point is very real to those legislators. And I'm very happy to see that it is a bipartisan issue.
We'll know it's serious when the candidates, right, for statewide office are making this a priority and really talking about it. And I hope they will. Thank you. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you.